can't remember the urgency that we experienced today. You know, you just start thinking about the time warp that took place, and then you play the arrival, then you play a Big Ten championship game. And by the way, signing date is 2 weeks away now. There's 3 weeks of recruiting. If you're in a championship game, you get 2 weeks of recruiting. I can't remember a December like that ever. And so we just got a plan, and that's the way it's going to be. 2 weeks of intense travel, home visits, relationship building in December, and I'm anxious to see how this all plays out. And so we've taken a much different approach here at Ohio State, and that's, yes, a degree is absolutely critical and essential to leave here with a degree, but we're going to try to do much more than that, try to give them a career. My understanding was early signing was for the Jalen Gills of the world, a kid that grew up in Columbus, Ohio, wants to be a Buckeye his entire life, and he's going to sign so you don't have to babysit him for the next 2 months, which I think that's very appropriate. What I've had happen to me is I talked to several players, and my answer to them, because we're straightforward with them, is that I don't know if I have a scholarship right now because I don't know who's leaving for the NFL draft. More than a couple, I got a comment back saying, Coach, the schools tell me if I don't sign on this 20th, I'm out. They're taking my scholarship offer. And that's not what the intent of the rule was. We always remember the only thing that really matters is that young person gets to go to the best place he can possibly go.
I didn't like it when we did it. I don't like it now. I don't think it's in the player's best interest. Don't see how it benefits anybody. It's really stressful for everyone. We're all trying to get ready for bowl games and playoff games, and we got a signing date right in the middle when we're going to be practicing for a playoff game. It's very stressful for a lot of coaches to get out and try to see as many guys as they could in December, accelerated everything. You don't have very much time to do that. If you're playing in your championship game, you have even less time to do it. Two things happen. I see more players getting pressured by some schools to sign early. I have not talked to a coach who's happy with it. Not one.
LeBron against Adetokunbo. When everybody came to see him, LeBron James, the first elbow. This time, Kevin Love came to the ball and drained the three ball. Turned over LeBron to Everett, making amends. Long launch. Kevin Love, the bottom for three. Pocket pass, Kevin Love, soft touch, and he rolls it in off the rubber rim. Middleton, very aggressive. He's serious. LeBron tracked him, that's his move. Middleton, look out. Rapperton, fire. Six-foot-one. Finds Kevin Love. Great concentration. Love is in the air here. Come on. Can't seem to solve this transition. That's on a steal. Dubuque in with the easy one. Middleton behind his back. In trouble. Finding LeBron James. One heck of a basketball game here in Milwaukee.
They shot the heck out of the ball, especially in the first half. You know, Brogdon had three behind-the-screen threes, and some of the same ones that he kind of took in the second half he missed. You know, we got to be much better. We got to be more in tune. I thought we were a lot more physical in the fourth quarter. We already had eight losses coming into this game. So you're not going to win them all, but you want to try to continue to get better and better. I thought in the fourth quarter, you know, we kind of picked up on what we didn't do in the first couple three quarters and started to get the wave going back in the right direction. So. You know, like I said, it's a long season, and I know those guys, we beat them the first two times, you know, here at once and then back in Cleveland, so they was extra motivated, and, you know, to have a boost like Eric Bledsoe, that definitely helps as well.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed, it is the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. What's going on? Hope you're having an outstanding start to your Wednesday. Yeah, it's almost over Wednesday. What the hell am I talking? It's 3 o'clock. You're probably already counting down the minutes until the 4 o'clock whistle or bell or buzzer or whatever it is that sets you free from the plant, office, building, wherever it is that you might be today. So thanks for being with us for the second half of your day. How does that sound? Kush, good to have you aboard. What's going on?
Not too much. Just living the dream.
Living the dream, indeed. Well, I got to tell you, I'm a little bit perplexed about this signing day, this early signing period, if you will, that Urban Meyer was discussing at the beginning of that nice montage, by the way, Kush. Really good stuff there from Urban Meyer, Nick Saban, two of the premier recruiters, not to mention just coaches in major college football, but two of the best recruiters, which I guess makes it easy to be a great coach.
Right.
You have the best player.
At the college level, that's very true.
Yeah. If you're good at one, you are probably good at the other. I think that's fair to say. And then a little bit on the Cavaliers. We will talk a little basketball, too, as LeBron James and the Cavaliers had their win streak snapped at 5. They have now, slumping. Now they have won 18 only out of their last 20 games instead of 18 out of their last 19. So Greek Freak doing freaky things. We'll talk about that in a little while later on. As a matter of fact, just to run it down for you, coming up in about 20, 22, 23 minutes, somewhere in that neighborhood, we're going to talk to Andrew Lynn, 11warriors.com, that's Buckeyes football website, about the early signing period and what the Buckeyes are doing, and, of course, a little bit more on what Urban Meyer just had to say, which we're going to replay and break down in a couple of minutes here. Then at 4:10, we will talk about the Freak, whether or not he is a legitimate MVP candidate at 30 points a game and 10.5 rebounds. You know, we talked yesterday about could, obviously, James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
And LeBron James has cleared away, far and away, clearly the front runners. But what about the Freak, and what is his status in that group? Considering not only, I don't know if you saw this, he's averaging 31 points, 11.5, I think, rebounds, and over 7 assists in the season series thus far against LeBron, playing against him head up. So, you know, they play the same position. He is outplaying LeBron James in overall statistics against one another in three matchups thus far, and I think they only have one more to go. So that's a pretty amazing thing when you talk about what the Freak has been able to do in establishing himself as one of the great players in the NBA. So Eddie Meissonette will talk to us about that coming up at about 4:10. Eddie with a variety of organizations, and we'll talk about that at 4:10. But I want to go back to the early signing period question marks and some of the really interesting stories that Urban Meyer had to share there in that commentary that you heard at the beginning of the montage, as he talks about, you know, what the intent of the early signing period was and what it's become instead, and how some coaches are using it in, let's just say, morally ambiguous ways.
That's a good way to put it.
Right? I mean, you know, to force kids' hands early. And Jim, we said this whenever there was talk about whether or not they should have to wait until, what is it, February for the signing day? Or,
yep, yeah, early, you know, February.
Can they do it early? And we talked about how if you open it up to early recruiting and early, you know, signing period, you're going to have coaches who are going to play that card and really, you know, twist the rules, bend the rules, or, as I say, be morally ambiguous in terms of threatening kids. You know what? If you don't do it now, you don't get it in February. If you don't do it now, it's not going to be there anymore. Forcing kids to make their decision early when they don't want to, when maybe they haven't made all five of their official visits yet, or whatever the case might be. And it's just really unfair. I think there's a lot of stuff to unpack from Urban Meyer's commentary there, and quite frankly from Nick Saban's as well, which was second on that montage. So I do want to talk a little bit about that. And then, as I say, we're going to talk more about it with Andrew Lynn, who's the recruiting guru, right, at 11warriors.com?
That's one way to put it, yeah, director of recruiting. But I'm going to go recruiting guru, our mutual friend Chris Lauterbeck, who we've had on the program. So, yeah, that's his thing, is the recruiting stuff. So we got the guy who knows.
Yeah, and there is, some interesting coverage of Ohio State's recruits in the 2018 recruiting class from the Cleveland.com website, and another guy we've had on the program a few times, Bill Landis.
Yes.
In fact, we should tweet that out. We'll try to get that out on the Twitter feed as well, Sports Radio 106.5, so you can kind of see some of these names, four-star guys, five-star, two five-star guys, a handful of four-stars, quite a big handful, as a matter of fact, a couple of three-star athletes there as well, and kind of let you take a look at it. But we'll talk about what is right and what's wrong with this early signing period. And, oh, by the way, speaking of five-star guys, five-star defensive end Micah Parsons, Cush, and I don't know how much you follow in this. Five-star defensive end Micah Parsons was apparently ready to go to Ohio State, but the Buckeyes self-reported a violation with their contacts with Micah Parsons and had to, in order to clear things up with the NCAA, had to end their recruiting of Micah Parsons. And Micah Parsons, who, by the way, is number 7 on the ESPN 300.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty damn good for those who don't know. Number 7 overall player in this, regardless of position in this class. Micah Parsons has now decided to go with James Franklin and Penn State because Ohio State had to pull back on their recruiting of him because of self-reported violations. He was also linked to Alabama. And then again, eventually Ohio State before his recruitment with the Buckeyes ended. And here's what the one description, and again, we'll talk about this with our 11 Warriors guest, but Reports surfaced that Ohio State self-reported a recruiting violation involving a picture Parsons took with ESPN analyst Kirk Herbstreit, of course, who is an Ohio State grad, and former Buckeye running back Eddie George, on the set of ESPN's College Game Day. According to the report, the Buckeyes stopped recruiting Parsons because he was given a benefit that wasn't made available to the general public, which deemed him ineligible to Ohio State. He then focused on the other schools on his list and took official visits throughout the season and decided on Penn State. I don't know, and maybe our recruiting guru guest will, what exactly the item of value is other than just that picture. Does that picture have value because of Heisman Trophy winner Eddie George, you know, on the set? Does that have value? Is that a benefit that somebody else is, you know, doesn't have and therefore he's not allowed to have? I don't literally know what the benefit is here, but Ohio State self-reported it and it cost them a chance to sign the seventh overall player in the class, at least according to the ESPN 300.
And by the way, the random side note we should not forget in this specific instance is the fact that Ohio State self-reported this and took themselves out of the running, essentially. How many other schools would do that, given the how-to-make-sausage nature that college recruiting seems to be?
Well, I get your point, and I would like to say Ohio State is unique in that regard, and maybe Urban is, but I'm guessing if the photo is the problem, it's public. And if everybody inside the business knows that that's illegal, that they almost had to self-report it because there's no way to hide it.
Right.
It would have come out anyway. And if it would have come out and they did try to hide it, then it becomes a recruiting violation that you wish you had self-reported and gotten no punishment for. Or just the slap on the wrist that is, okay, you can't have him now. That's my guess. That's my guess. My guess is, you know, if it had happened with Alabama and posing with I just don't know what the specific benefit is. If it's just that photo and I don't know exactly how that benefits him, then perhaps they have no choice because it already was made public. The photo was taken, you know, they were on the set of College Game Day, so everybody knows. So I don't think they would have a choice but to self-report that since everybody was going to find out anyway. That's the only thing I can think of. But again, maybe we can get some answers on that from Andrew Lynn from 11warriors.com and see if he knows. And by the way, I will say this. If it is all about that photo, Jim, it's another question I think that college football should really have to ask. What if this kid really liked Ohio State?
Yeah.
What if this kid really, really was all about, you know what, I want to be a Buckeye, not just because of Urban Meyer. Let's just assume, maybe not even assume, how about we just hypothesize that he's a really good student.
Okay.
And he really likes the school of medicine or the school of agriculture or the school of business or the veterinary school or whatever at Ohio State. And because somebody snapped a picture with him, college football says you can't go there. If you do, it's a violation. You have to pick somewhere else that might not have all of the things he's looking for in a school. Just hypothesizing here. I have no idea what kind of a player he is, or excuse me, person he is doing it. I'm just saying, it is awfully weird that they get to dictate where kids can go to school without there being trouble, without there being, recruiting violations and less penalties and punishments for those kinds of things if he goes there. So we'll talk about that a little bit again coming up in just a bit. But I want to play a little bit about, going back now. I want to play, and I'll do it right here, Jim. On this end of Urban Meyer talking about some of the things that we thought we knew about the early signing period and about what is really happening during this early signing period of college football recruiting.
I can't remember the urgency that we experienced today. You know, you just start thinking about the time warp that took place, and then you play a rival, then you play a Big Ten championship game. And by the way, signing date is 2 weeks away now. There's 3 weeks of recruiting. If you're in a championship game, you get 2 weeks of recruiting. I can't remember a December like that ever. And so we just got to plan, and that's the way it's going to be. 2 weeks of
that is such an important point. That is such an important point, and I want to emphasize it. And I'm so glad to hear Urban Meyer say that. This is something that is changing the way the game is played. It's changing the recruiting game, that is. And it's going to change the way coaches coach. It's going to change the way resources are diverted, how they're going to be, handed out, if you will.
how much attention is being paid to that championship game, to the bowl preparation, to the playoff preparation, if that's what it is, because you've got to be in full-on recruiting mode like the kind that you are in January after your bowl game most of the time, leading up to signing day, the real signing day, which is usually, what, the first Tuesday in February or something?
Yeah, it's right after the Super Bowl, mostly, is usually how the calendar falls nowadays.
Yeah, so he's right to... I don't know if the right word is complain here, if he's complaining about it, but he's right to point out that this really is a game changer. And it doesn't sound like one that he's fond of. And quite frankly, I kind of agree with him. I don't think I'm very fond of this.
It's travel, home visits, relationship building.
Hold on a second. Let's go back.
Away now. There's 3 weeks of recruiting. If you're in a championship game, you get 2 weeks of recruiting. I can't remember a December like that ever. And so we just got a plan, and that's the way it's going to be. 2 weeks of intense travel, home visits, relationship building in December. And I'm anxious to see how this all plays out. And so we've taken a much different approach here at Ohio State. And that's, yes, a degree is absolutely critical and essential to leave here with a degree, but we're going to try to do much more than that, try to give them a career. My understanding was early signing was for the Jalen Gills of the world, a kid that grew up in Columbus, Ohio, wants to be a Buckeye his entire life, and he's going to sign so you don't have to babysit him for the next 2 months, which I think that's very appropriate. What I've had happen to me is I talked to several players, and my answer to them, because we're straightforward with them, is that I don't know if I have a scholarship right now because I don't know who's leaving for the NFL draft. More than a couple, I got a comment back saying, Coach, the schools tell me if I don't sign on this 20th, I'm out. They're taking my scholarship up.
That's the problem right there. Of all of the questions and all of the of all of the questions and all of the complaints that people have about this period, I think that in essence is the biggest one. Because Urban's right. I don't know who's going to the NFL. I don't know how many I'm going to have available. I would like to give you a scholarship, but I have a whole bunch of other guys I would like to give scholarships to. And if I know what the number is, I'll be able to decide what is my ranking and where are you on that and what can I tell you. But Coach, I can't have you. I can't wait like that, Coach. Somebody else is telling me that they have fewer, and if I don't take this now, they're giving it to somebody else. I got to take it. So you got to tell me, are you doing this for me, or do I got to wait till February? Because if I got to wait till February and it costs me another deal someplace else, another scholarship, well, I can't take that risk. He's right. That is a fundamental problem with this entire early signing period, dare I say, nonsense.
Is that I don't know if I have a scholarship right now because I don't know who's leaving for the NFL draft. More than a couple, I got a comment back saying, Coach, the schools tell me if I don't sign on this 20th, I'm out. They're taking my scholarship offer. And that's not what the intent of the rule was.
No, that is absolutely not what the intent of the rule is. But that's exactly what it becomes. You know, it's a feeding frenzy. And the first Tuesday or whatever it is in February that the, you know, original national signing day was, it's a feeding frenzy of everybody trying to get their last minute digs in to get this kid, and every kid, you know, trying to figure out where is the right place for me and whether or not the scholarship is still there for me. And it was there yesterday when you offered it, but you're telling me today you don't have a scholarship for me because somebody else accepted that you didn't expect. Or somebody else who was declaring for the draft is coming back. Now they're not going to go. All of that stuff plays into the regular signing day period, and now you double it, triple it, or make it even harder for kids and for coaches in some ways to make the most intelligent decision for them.
We always remember the only thing that really matters is that young person gets to go to the best place he can possibly go.
I didn't like it when we did it.
This is Saban now. The transition right there is from Urban Meyer to Nick Saban.
I didn't like it when we did it. I don't like it now. I don't think it's in the player's best interest. I don't see how it benefits anybody. It's really stressful for everyone. We're all trying to get ready for bowl games and playoff games, and we got a signing date right in the middle when we're going to be practicing for a playoff game. It's very stressful for a lot of coaches to get out and try to see as many guys as they could in December, accelerated everything.
Very similar what Nick Saban said there is to what Urban Meyer said. Talk about two of the greats, two of the highest paid, two of the most successful, two of the multi-champion, multi-time national champions, and on down the line. Nick Saban and Urban Meyer are rivals, but they are spot on, and they are both in agreement over this, that this is not necessarily good for the kids, and it's not necessarily very good for the universities. We're trying to get ready for football games. We have playoff games, or in Ohio State's case, a Cotton Bowl game against USC, and a huge challenge, an opportunity to really showcase ourselves to recruits for the regular signing period in the bowl game. And instead, we got to go out there and be chasing these kids down now and making decisions at a much faster rate than we would like to. And I think it just leads to problems.
You don't have very much time to do that. If you're playing in your championship game, you have even less time to do it. Two things happen. I see more players getting pressured by some schools.
to sign early. I have not talked to a coach who's happy with it, not one.
And that says a lot. I really do. I think that speaks volumes there. Urban Meyer and Nick Saban talking about how much pressure it puts on kids. And I would have to concur that it's not necessarily the best policy for kids for who are trying to prepare, and coaches who are trying to prepare for football games. But for kids who really want to take the time, like I said, make the visits, maybe you're torn between two schools, you want to see them again, you know, on a non-official visit, you want to talk to some alums and people who have graduated, all these things. But no, if you don't make the decision right now, we're pulling your scholarship offer. Or kids, you know, that's what programs would say, or kids doing just the opposite and agreeing with somebody else, and then boom. Here in the early signing period, somebody comes in and swipes them away from another recruiter. Jim.
Yeah, and it obviously makes it stressful for coaches who are involved in bowl games and things. You heard both Urban and Saban mention that. To me, the most interesting part, and I think it was Urban who brought this up in his comments that we played, was that because this early signing period, which is exactly what it is, it's an early signing period, and it's a brief one. It ends Friday. So it's literally just today, tomorrow, and into Friday, and then that's it until the regular February one, is that because we're not at the deadline for guys who are going to leave college to attempt to go to the NFL, yeah, a lot of the big schools don't have a fixed set number of what their scholarships stand
right,
at.
Right.
And that's an issue if you overbook, like the way the SEC did
Jim
a few
Harbaugh,
years back.
Which Jim, well, don't just say the SEC. We brought up the SEC doing that in defense, if you will, of Jim Harbaugh, who took the national brunt of the criticism last year.
Right.
You know, the brunt of the national criticism may be a better way to say that. But if you recall, you know, there was a Michigan player or a Michigan recruit who was told he had a spot. And then very shortly before the signing day, suddenly Jim Harbaugh or whoever makes phone calls saying, sorry about that, we thought we had a spot, but we don't. See if you can catch on with your second choice. Oh, well, that second choice, when I told them no, that I orally committed to Michigan, moved on and signed their second choice and my position. So that one's gone. And I remember, you know, Harbaugh really took a lot of heat for that because he kind of draws a lot of heat for various reasons, his personality.
Sure.
And you know, so we see kids getting screwed by things like that, and now I think that is only going to increase. Either the team or the kids get screwed based on we don't know how many scholarships we have, and it's going to either hurt the kid or it's going to hurt the school.
Yeah, out of all the little...
They might overbook, as you said.
Yeah, and out of all the little issues that especially a coach or somebody on a staff that does the recruiting could have with this, and again, we heard both Urban and Nick Saban mention a few of those, to me, that seems like the most important one. Because, again, you don't know technically, especially if you're a big Ohio State, Alabama, and not to knock them, but this type of problem would affect the Toledos and the Bowling Greens nearly as much.
Right.
But you don't know what your scholarship number for 2018 in this case, you know, would be. So you have to kind of play with that a little bit, and sometimes then you might end up, unfortunately, in a situation like the one you just outlined from Michigan from last year.
That's exactly right. So we're going to talk more about this. Andrew Lynn is the recruiting guru / director, editor, whatever, at 11lawyers.com, the Buckeyes website, Buckeyes SB Nation website. So we'll talk with him about this early signing period, and we will indeed put some names to the Buckeyes recruits here for 2018 upcoming. But we'll do all of that after the bottom of the hour local sports center, which we will do after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day yesterday in the Boca Raton Bowl. Akron of the MAC, runner-up after getting smacked around in the MAC championship game by the Toledo Rockets, went down and got smacked around by Florida Atlantic. The Fighting Lane Kiffins, not really what they're called. 50-3, 47-point margin of victory, while huge is not the all-time bowl record for margin of victory. That honor involves another team from the MAC on the wrong end. Tulsa beat Bowling Green back in 2008 in the GMAC Bowl, 63-7 for a 56-point margin. Those are indeed wild stats. Buffalo Wild Wings, wild stat of the day. We've got hockey tickets to give away next half hour as well. If you want to go see the Toledo Walleye against Kalamazoo, be paying attention for that. I'll tell you when. Just listen for the cue to call. And we'll talk more college football with Andrew Lynn of 11warriors.com when we come right back on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I can't remember the urgency that we experienced today. You know, you just start thinking about the time warp that took place, and then you play your arrival, then you play a Big Ten championship game, and by the way, signing date is 2 weeks away now. There's 3 weeks of recruiting. If you're in a championship game, you get 2 weeks of recruiting. I can't remember a December like that ever.
Urban Meyer expressing some concern, some mixed feelings perhaps about the way the early signing period has impacted football teams. Nick Saban, arguably the other most high-profile coach in the country, it probably is those two guys, two of the highest paid, two of the most successful, multinational championships, different places. They both kind of are eye-to-eye on this. They don't like it. Saban a little more direct about it. We'll play a little bit of that for you, too. But Urban Meyer talking about some of the problems with the early signing period. But nonetheless, it is there, and it's what they are forced to do if they really want to stay competitive and get the jump on players that that want to sign early. Joining us now to break it down is the recruiting guru, if you will, of 11warriors.com, a Buckeyes devoted website, talking about the Buckeyes 2018 early signing period and 2018 class. Andrew, thanks for the time. How, up here in Toledo, how are you?
Good. How are you?
We're good. Thanks for spending a little bit of time with us talking about this. What's your reaction to what some of the top coaches like Urban are saying? You know, that while we're trying to get ready for a game, a bowl game, Saban said we're trying to get ready for a playoff game, and we've got to be out there doing all of these things for a signing period that isn't really supposed to be until February, where we don't have to do all of these last-minute full-court presses until long after our season is over.
Yeah, and today Meyer had kind of mentioned that there's a little bit of positives to it, and then there's some more negatives. The negatives obviously being a little more overpowering than the positives. You know, it does speed up the recruiting process a little bit, and it forces Ohio State and Alabama and, you know, other premier schools to make decisions on kids earlier. Meyer did mention that, you know, the early signing period does allow for them to sign kids who have long been, you know, wanted to be Buckeyes. Jalen Gill, for example, he said he didn't have to babysit him anymore, and it wasn't that, you know, he's worried about him committing or anything, or decommitting, going to another school or anything. It's just more so they know they want to be Buckeyes. Let's get it done and move on. But then there's, you know, the deal with having to prepare for bowl games. You have to spend, you know, countless weeks between the Big Ten championship and then the signing day, out on the road recruiting. And it doesn't really allow you to prepare for a bowl game.
That's a very interesting point. And so you can certainly see both sides of that, as you say. You know, why waste time with kids who are already, you know, why make them drag this out with kids who are never going to sign anywhere else, like the young man that he referenced, Jalen Gill, who has always wanted to be a Buckeye since he was a child. He's not going anywhere else. Why not just let this get over with? But it does force, and we didn't play this part of the clip for you, Andrew, but you probably heard it anyway, in which Urban talks about, and Nick Saban talked about too, kids that are pressured by other schools. You know what? You give us this commitment now at this early period, or you're going to lose your spot. We're not going to be able to guarantee it'll still be there for you in February, forcing kids to make decisions when they might still be very conflicted.
Yeah, and it's not even just, I mean, every school is really doing it, even Ohio State to an extent. You know, they're going to say, we want you to sign. If you don't do it, then, you know, we're going to have to look at you like you're not committed. We're going to have to recruit you all over again, and we're going to find somebody to take your spot. And, you know, with that, you know, it really forces kids to make a decision that they might not necessarily do otherwise. And then a lot of the smaller schools, and that's who it really benefits, is the smaller schools who have landed commitments from kids. You know, for example, Cincinnati landed a commitment from Malik Mann, who is Jackson Carmen's teammate at Fairfield, a high four-star recruit. A lot of people thought he was going to go to Michigan State. Surprised he didn't get an offer from Ohio State. In years past, they could have said, okay, you know, we need a defensive end because they obviously don't have the depth. And they could have went after him in January, early February, started building a relationship with him, offered him a scholarship, tried to flip him. Today, he signed with Cincinnati, and there's no doing that for the next 2 months.
We are talking about the early signing period for college football and some of the reactions that some of the coaches have to it, including Ohio State's Urban Meyer. Andrew Lynn with 11warriors.com, a Buckeye football devoted website, joining us. Jim Cushion's got a question for you. Andrew, go ahead. Jim, go ahead.
You know, and all those things kind of are you know, we're talking about with some of these coaches not, you know, not liking for some of the reasons, you know, that we just mentioned. At the same time, though, this is still a relatively, as far as these things go, newer process, despite objections from coaches out there that are out there now public, Andrew, do you think this will obviously continue, or do you think the NCAA might relook at this down the line?
Yeah, I actually think just, you know, kind of the reaction I found on social media and reading other people's stuff from talking to coaches, that it seems like they enjoy being able to get, you know, a majority of their class signed, not have to deal with it. And yeah, it does kind of obstruct the bowl game preparation and stuff like that. But at the same time, if you can get 20 kids signed like Ohio State did today and not have to recruit them until February, you know, that's a big deal. And for most schools, I think that they'd rather do that, even though it does come with a little bit of, you know, this is uncharted territory. They don't really know how to handle it. But if it eventually becomes, you know, the premier signing day, like it seems to have been today, then, you know, I think they'll get used to it. They'll adapt, and it won't be that big of a deal.
Andrew, let's talk about some of those 20 kids then. Let's get into the actual business of the recruiting battles and what Urban Meyer did today. And I want to start with Jalen Gill because he referenced him. And the question I have about Jalen Gill is what kind of plans there will be for him, considering that this five-star back, the number one all-purpose back in the country in a lot of rankings, why he would be so quick to sign with a team that has a true freshman like J.K. Dobbins, who has established himself as the number one back, and then there's still going to be the veteran. What would he be, a redshirt sophomore next year, Mike Weber, you know, who of course is also getting a lot of time. Gill isn't somebody who you would think wants to sit and be redshirted his own freshman year.
Yeah, and I'm not certain that Mike Weber is going to be around too much longer. I know that the dealer of the NFL is something that every kid, you know, growing up wants to go and be a professional football player. But, you know, if there's an opportunity for him to go to the next level, that might be something that happens sooner rather than later.
Okay.
When it comes to, you know, the traditional running back versus the H-back, which is what Gill is, he's more of a Curtis Samuel type role, a Paris Campbell type role where you want to get him the ball in space. It won't be just direct handoffs like what Dobbins gets. So they would be able to complement each other very well.
That role you're talking about, though, you know, the Paris Campbell plays, you know, it was also supposed to be played by DeMarre McCall, wasn't it? And he was injured a lot of this year, so that's another position where Gill is going to have a lot of serious. I mean, I guess you go to Ohio State or any one of these schools that are looking at a guy like Gill, you're going to have competition. There's great players at every position, certainly, but I'm just talking about positions filled by people who have already done it, who are back, or who were going to do it, you know, like McCall in his situation there. So does Gill, I mean, you know, obviously, as Urban said, he's always wanted to go to Ohio State. I mean, is he prepared, if need be, to just go ahead and be a redshirt, considering the number of guys in front of him?
I mean, I think they all kind of understand that there's a lot of talent in front of them. And like you kind of said, that, you know, you come to a school like Ohio State, there's always going to be talent there. It's just whether or not you can kind of outshine the other people. You know, the same could be said about Cameron Babb. He's, you know, if it weren't for an injury his junior year and then him missing his entire senior year with a torn ACL, he could easily be among the top, you know, two or three wide receivers in the country. But him coming in, you can say, well, you have Benjamin Victor, Austin Mack, K.J. Hill, Terry McLaurin all in front of him. But I expect him to make the same similar kind of impact as what Dobbins did this year. It's just, you know, giving them the opportunity to get in the system, and they take advantage of it.
That's a great point. And as it turns out, he's a four-star prospect probably because of the circumstances you just described with being injured and so on, number 12 receiver. In the 247 sports rating, and of course everybody has a different rating, but that's another one. I want to go back to the other five-star guy because there's two five-star guys signed in this class, and that, of course, is Teron Vincent, the five-star defensive tackle. What can you tell us about him and, again, prospects for his freshman season?
Yeah, it's actually three because you also have five-star tight end Jeremy Ruckert as well. Mitchell kind of comes in at a position where Ohio State hasn't really recruited, been able to at least land top flight defensive tackles. You know, they've had a number of misses in recent years. Last year, I remember, you and I had a conversation about Marvin Wilson, who, he was a big defensive tackle from Texas, committed to Florida State over Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just kind of that same similar, that narrative that Ohio State just continues to miss out on defensive tackles. And Vincent is as good as advertised. You know, he could immediately step in and given the lack of depth along Ohio State's defensive line, could make an impact pretty early on.
Thank you for reminding me about Rucker, too. I actually saw him rated as a four-star prospect in one service, but I do see him as a five-star in others. So let's talk about him, 6'6", 238 pounds, major type size target for whomever is going to be the quarterback, probably Dwayne Haskins, but we'll see where that goes. In fact, I may have to ask you about that as well. But what do you see for that young man as far as his early projections?
Yeah, Urban Meyer called him today. He said he was the best tight end prospect he's ever seen. I would agree with that. I've seen him twice in person, once out at the opening in Oregon, and he was just dominant. Like, he is bigger than all the linebackers that he would ever face. He's just as fast as the safeties, the corners that he would go up against. In fact, there was one route that he ran where he just left Jaden Woodby, who is another Ohio State commit, in the dust. And it's just kind of that matchup problem that he'll bring that matchup problem to Ohio State, and we haven't seen that from Ohio State in a long time.
We're talking to Andrew Lind, 11warriors.com. You know, I'm looking at the website right now, and I got to ask you about one other guy, and I may ask you about a couple more, but I want to know how a guy whose nickname is Blue can come to Ohio State University. How does LaChristian Smith, whose nickname is Blue, LaChristian Blue Smith, end up anywhere other than Ann Arbor? I mean, they can't let him keep that name down there at Columbus, can they?
Yeah, absolutely. The nickname actually comes from when he was younger. He was born a little bit prematurely, and he suffered from jaundice. And they put him under a light to keep him warm. And his dad actually just said he looks blue, you know, and the nickname just stuck. And ever since he committed, you know, obviously people are like, well, you can't. People aren't going to say that, or, you know, Ohio State fans aren't going to say, go Blue Smith,
that's what,
you know.
That's what I'm worried about. Like, if he catches a ball down the sideline and it's a foot race to the end zone, you don't dare tell me there's not going to be guys wearing face paint, scarlet and gray face paint and jerseys in the stands yelling, go Blue, go. Oh, crap. Go Smith. You can't say it.
If he's scoring touchdowns against Michigan, it doesn't matter.
You just can't see a go Blue. Or a guy in Ohio State, Scarlet and Gray. Kush, go ahead.
I want to get to one of the other recruits. Maybe not the cream of this particular crop, but still a four-star guy, ninth at his position, fifth here in the state, and that state being here in Ohio. One local Toledo one, Dallas Gant, the outside linebacker from St. John's. Gant, by the way, also an early enrollee. What can you tell us about him and his prospects?
Yeah, he and the rest of the linebackers are going to Roger Mitchell and Kayvon Pope, they're going to be stepping into a situation where the Ohio State linebackers just really haven't performed up to the standard that we kind of expect them to this year. And, you know, he might not necessarily see the field super early as a freshman, but, you know, that's kind of expected, especially at a place where, you know, they are bringing in three linebackers. You know, I could see him contributing on special teams early and then becoming, you know, one of the better linebackers Ohio State has.
Missing among, unless I'm missing it, among this list of signees here in the early signing period are quarterbacks. And so I just want to ask you about Dwayne Haskins, of course, seems to have achieved favored status to replace JT Barrett, of course, before Joe Burrow broke his hand. And this isn't a recruiting question, obviously, because these guys are already there. But before Joe Burrow broke his hand early on and, of course, had to miss time, and it looked like perhaps he was in the driver's seat to be the next guy up. How do you see the quarterback depth already in Columbus, and then what are they looking at as far as this recruiting period?
When it comes to the depth, it's there right now. There's a lot of speculation that whoever loses that quarterback battle, and I don't really want to speculate because I think that they both have certain talents that they bring and.
Yeah,
they
but
both
we
be
want
successful
you to speculate.
At
it's
that
what we
position.
Do on sports talk radio. We speculate and we guess. So go ahead. Nobody's going to hold you to it.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I just think it's one of those situations where, you know, Haskins obviously has the arm, and that's one thing a lot of people have been enamored with. But at the same time, Burrow is kind of in that same mold as JT Barrett. He knows how to run the read option a lot better, and that's something that Urban has obviously fallen in love with. Really. I think the spring will be a big determination on what happens with that, and then whoever loses that battle will I assume would transfer out. And then who they brought in this year, they brought in a quarterback from Texas named Matthew Baldwin. He's only a three-star kid. He was actually committed to Colorado State when Ohio State brought him in for a visit in November. And he actually plays at Lake Travis in Texas, which has a long history of sending elite quarterbacks to the next level. You might have heard of Baker Mayfield, Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah,
he actually
twice.
Yeah, he went to Lake Travis. And, you know, they throw the ball around a lot. He has a very active arm. He's very accurate. And he actually is trying to lead his team to state this coming weekend. So, you know, a lot of people get caught up with the fact that they don't have Emory Jones in the class. But I think Ohio State went out and they found a quarterback who they think will fit their system, and I think they got a good one.
Last thing, and we can let you run here, and we really appreciate the time. Andrew Lind, 11warriors.com, the Buckeyes recruiting coordinator for the website. What happened with the number 7 prospect in the ESPN 300, Micah Parsons? We know that we're finding out now that Ohio State self-reported a violation that caused them to be unable to recruit him any longer. And I don't know if they were in the driver's seat or if they were neck and neck with Alabama at the time. But eventually, Parsons has announced his commitment to Penn State. So what happened there with that 7th-ranked overall prospect, the 5-star defensive end?
Well, after that report actually came out, I reached out to several of my sources. And, you know, they indicated to me, and this is something that I had known for quite some time and had written about extensively, but Ohio State had actually stopped recruiting Parsons altogether before they reported those violations. When he came for that official visit, there were concerns about his maturity and just the crowd he hung around with. You know, without going, you know, too much further into that, it's just kind of one of those things that the situation that he was in isn't the best, and Ohio State wanted to distance itself from him and kind of moved in a different direction. And then when that happened, you know, he went from everybody thinking he was going to go to Ohio State to then Penn State coming back into the driver's seat. He was already committed there once. You know, he didn't really want to go too far from home, and then that's obviously why he ended up with the Nittany Lions today.
All right, that is interesting. Just for the sake of clarity, though, what was the benefit that he received that caused Ohio State to self-report? I know, you know, I'm reading about it that he took a picture with Kirk Herbstreit and Eddie George. That's illegal? Is that what it is? What's the benefit to him that he can't have that Ohio State then had to self-report on?
Well, they're actually not allowed to be in situations like that where they're getting a benefit greater than what the general public would be. So, like, if he just went to the game day set and he watched game day for a moment, like, that's not a big deal. But he was brought onto the set, took pictures with former Ohio State players, you know, Kirk Herbstreit, Eddie George. Mm-hmm. You know, they took him into a restricted area that was only open to the media, you know, and credentialed general public. But that, going above that, is what the actual violation was.
So if he goes to the game day set and they say, hey, come on in, you know, he's a pretty famous young kid, he's one of the top recruits in the country, blah, 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 and takes a picture with Desmond Howard,
it's okay
then that he goes to Ohio State if they still wanted him? Is it still considered a benefit?
Would Michigan have
to self-report that then, is, I guess, my question?
No, it would have been Ohio State because he would have been on Ohio State's campus because he was on that visit with Ohio State. It didn't matter who it was.
He could have met for him to get in there then, basically.
Yeah, he could have met Christian Ponder's, Sam Ponder. He could have met her and took a picture with her, and it still would have been a violation.
It still would have been a violation. Okay.
Yes.
Then Ohio State would have to report, even though it was with somebody, some other school's alum.
Yes.
That's what you're saying. Okay. All right, good. That's it. I mean, it's good to get that clarification because I couldn't understand what the benefit was. So you're saying the benefit is anything that the general public can't have, including going on TV or being seen on a set that that nobody else would have access to.
Yes.
Fair enough. That's good. Now, there's no punishment for that. I mean, you said that Ohio State had decided earlier anyway to not recruit him, to stop recruiting him for various questions about character or surroundings or whatever the case might be. If they did still want to recruit him, is that the punishment? If they self-report, they just say, okay, we're not recruiting him anymore, and therefore it's considered null and void, it's a non-issue for the NCAA?
I think that's where there's a little bit of uncertainty around that, just because the initial report wasn't fully accurate.
Right.
You know, Ohio State could conceivably say, you know, this is what happened. You know, we did not obviously intend to do this, and then the NCAA could, you know, come back and say, well, you're not allowed to recruit that kid anymore, or you can recruit that kid, but, you know, ex-coach who brought him there is suspended for this amount of games and so forth. Okay. You know, I think it's just, you know, they had already moved on by that point. You know, the outlet who reported it just kind of put the two and two together and said, okay, we know they're not recruiting him anymore. This is what happened. This must be why. And that's the part that's not accurate.
All right, good. I'm glad to get that clarification. That really, really helps make a lot of sense out of this. We're so glad that you were able to do that. Andrew Lynn, joining us from 11warriors.com, obviously one of the best Buckeye sites out there. If you're looking for great information on recruits or on bowl game matchups and analysis, virtually all of it, make sure you log on to 11warriors.com. Andrew, thanks for the time. We really appreciate it. Have a great holiday and enjoy the Cotton Bowl, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Andrew Lynn, 11warriors.com. Great way to wrap up hour number one right here on ESPN 106.5. The tickets, what we'll do is get a top-of-the-hour sports center. I promised you walleye tickets in this half hour, but since it is already 4:01, sit tight. I'll give you some walleye tickets next half hour, okay? I promise you that. And we're also going to talk with Eddie Meissonet, a little NBA discussion, Eddie Meissonet with Fox Sports and many other media outlets. Going to talk a little bit about the Freak versus LeBron last night, what's going on with the Pistons, what's going on in the Western Conference. All NBA coverage with Eddie Meissonet coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I can't remember the urgency that we experienced today. You know, you just start thinking about the time warp that took place, and then you play the arrival, then you play a Big Ten championship game. And by the way, signing date is 2 weeks away now. There's 3 weeks of recruiting. If you're in a championship game, you get 2 weeks of recruiting. I can't remember a December like that ever. And so we just got a plan, and that's the way it's going to be. 2 weeks of intense travel, home visits, relationship building in December, and I'm anxious to see how this all plays out. And so we've taken a much different approach here at Ohio State, and that's, yes, a degree is absolutely critical and essential to leave here with a degree, but we're going to try to do much more than that, try to give them a career. My understanding was early signing was for the Jalen Gills of the world, a kid that grew up in Columbus, Ohio, wants to be a Buckeye his entire life, and he's going to sign so you don't have to babysit him for the next 2 months, which I think that's very appropriate. What I've had happen to me is I talked to several players, and my answer to them, because we're straightforward with them, is that I don't know if I have a scholarship right now because I don't know who's leaving for the NFL draft. More than a couple, I got a comment back saying, Coach, the schools tell me if I don't sign on this 20th, I'm out. They're taking my scholarship offer. And that's not what the intent of the rule was. We always remember the only thing that really matters is that young person gets to go to the best place he can possibly go.
I didn't like it when we did it. I don't like it now. I don't think it's in the player's best interest. I don't see how it benefits anybody. It's really stressful for everyone. We're all trying to get ready for bowl games and playoff games, and we got a signing date right in the middle when we're going to be practicing for a playoff game. It's very stressful for a lot of coaches to get out and try to see as many guys as they could in December, accelerated everything. You don't have very much time to do that. If you're playing in your championship game, you have even less time to do it. Two things happen. I see more players getting pressured by some schools to sign early. I have not talked to a coach who's happy with it. Not one.
LeBron against Otto DeCooper. When everybody came to see him, LeBron James, the first elbow. This time, Kevin Love came to the ball, drained the three ball. Turned it around, making amends. Long launch. Kevin Love, the bottom for three. Pocket pass, Kevin Love, soft touch, and he rolls it in off the rubber rim. Middleton, very aggressive. He's serious. LeBron tracked him and gets his foot. That's a foul. Middleton, look out. Rapperman. Six-foot-one. Finds Kevin Love. Great concentration. Love is in the air here. Come on. Can't seem to solve this transition. That's on a steal. He'll go in with the easy one. Middleton behind his back. In trouble. Find your LeBron James. One heck of a basketball game here in Milwaukee.
They shot the heck out of the ball, especially in the first half. You know, Brogdon had three behind-the-screen threes, and some of the same ones that he kind of took in the second half he missed. You know, we got to be much better. We got to be more in tune. I thought we were a lot more physical in the fourth quarter. We already had eight losses coming into this game, so you're not going to win them all, but you want to try to continue to get better and better. I thought in the fourth quarter, you know, we kind of picked up what we didn't do in the first couple three quarters and started to get the wave going back in the right direction. So You know, like I said, it's a long season, and I know those guys, we beat them the first two times, you know, here once and then back in Cleveland, so they was extra motivated, and, you know, to have a boost like Eric Bledsoe, that definitely helps as well.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. The extravaganza rolls on 13 minutes after 4 o'clock now. Thanks for being with us toward the end of your work day. If you've already hit that 4 o'clock whistle or heard that 4 o'clock whistle, enjoy it. Drive safely. Thanks for being with us. We'll open up the phone lines in a bit at 866-240-1065. But we do have a special guest that we would like to start this hour with, and he is a familiar voice here on The Ticket in Toledo, and that belongs to Eddie Meissonette, who does tremendous work for a variety of sports media publications and online services, including Sports Fan Journal, as well as Fox Sports as well. Eddie, talking a little NBA with us once again. Good to have you back, sir. How the hell are you?
Well, you'll be happy to know I am in the state of Ohio celebrating Christmas with my loved ones, and I'm looking forward to dominating this segment like I always do, my brother.
you do a great job of dominating it, even if you were wrong half the time. All right, Eddie Meissonette, let's get into it. I got to ask you, since you're here in Ohio, let's talk about Cleveland and the defending Eastern Conference champions, and of course, not really about last night. Greek, I will get your thoughts on the Freak and how unbelievably freaky he really is. And he is just rising at an extraordinarily high, rapid pace into the pantheon of great players, greatest players on the planet. I mean, he's certainly top 10, and who knows exactly how high he can go before he's done. But I want to talk about the state of the Cavaliers today versus what the state of the Cavaliers is going to become February or so, when Isaiah Thomas, if his old man hip ever gets fixed. Because right now, Eddie, Cavaliers have won 18 out of 20. Tremendous run that they've been on. LeBron has been doing stupid things. Averaging a triple-double over the course of his last 14 games, I believe. I know he didn't have a great game last night with 7 turnovers to go along with his 39 points. But he's been averaging a triple-double over 13, 14 games. But the thing that interests me, and I want your thoughts on, Eddie, is, you know, Jose Calderon is the point guard, and he's averaging 6 shots a game, and that's all he needs to average. He is not supposed to do a whole lot more than that. But when Isaiah Thomas takes that job over, he averages 20 shots a game. He is a scorer first. He is an absolutely dynamic player. He's not going to run the team the way Jose Calderon runs the offense and contributes. How are they going to keep the chemistry when there's such a vastly different guy who's going to be bringing up the ball and running the point?
I think the Cleveland Cavaliers are in a tremendous position right now where they get to be in an experimental phase while being so talented, especially at the top with LeBron James, where they literally can go out there and say, let's try some things and let's see what we can make work. And right now they're in a great position where they have somebody like Calderon who fits a role and is willing to be very deferential. And I think it's what you see comparatively to what you see maybe in Oklahoma City, where people are still trying to figure out their roles. And I give Oklahoma City a lot of credit that they're not everybody in the organization is pressing the panic button, but they have to figure out kind of where their roles are going to be and how people are going to fall into place when it comes into April and into the postseason. Right now, Cleveland's sitting here 2.5 back of Boston. Who would have ever thought that the way Boston started the season? And they're 2.5 games back. They're arguably their second or third best player is still not on the roster yet. They're getting good contributions from Wade. They're getting good contributions from Calderon. Tristan Thompson's going to be back. And then they're going to have Derrick Rose sitting there as a 12th man, which is who would have thought that would have been the circumstance. So I think they're going to be in a good situation to not only still be able to plug and play different scenarios and different situations to optimize themselves for April and beyond, but I also think they're in a situation that they're going to be able to have some time to figure some things out and then think about, do we want to trade Brooklyn's pick? Do we want to move Iman Shumpert or try to take another swing to get another big player on that roster so they can get one more push with this current team that they have in Cleveland?
Eddie Meissonette joining us, Sports Fan Journal Online, as well as Fox Sports and other media outlets. So you don't think there will be a significant transition period between, you know, the two styles of the guys who are running the show, well, the one now and the one who will be, of course, which is Isaiah when he is there. You don't think there's going to be a transition period where chemistry has to be fixed? I think it's neat that you call it an experimental period now,
But experimental in December is different than experimental when you get into the second half of the season and you start pushing toward the playoffs. You don't want to be experimenting. You want to have it all figured out.
I think that's it's half full, glass half empty, half full, right? And I think that when Isaiah returns, I wouldn't be surprised if they lost 4 out of 5. I wouldn't be surprised that they suddenly look like a different team. I think it'll test the temerity of Tyronn Lue to figure out how are we going to balance these egos, these superstars, these minutes, these roles, these responsibilities. But the baseline in all of this is the king, LeBron Raymond James. And if LeBron is there to be the steadying influence, everything else is plug and play. Brian Windhorst made an analysis about how some of the things that LeBron does on court has become so natural to him where he's able to react, because a lot of the things that LeBron is doing now, he just knows where people are going to be. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how Isaiah fits into the construct of where LeBron anticipates him being and how they counteract with each other. And he's had experience in working with guards like Kyrie Irving in the past on figuring out how to get the best out of him as well. And Isaiah, to his credit, he seems like he's going to be very open-minded and willing. He said before he's trying to get that Brinks truck money, and I don't know what his future is going to be as far as a cash grab, but he's also never going to have an opportunity maybe to ever get a take a legitimate run at a title like he is right now. So I'm just really intrigued and optimistic to see what he's going to look like going into 2018.
Eddie Meissonette joining us, talking a little bit of NBA. See, you mentioned the Celtics, so let me go there now just to kind of stay in the Eastern Conference. It's amazing. You know, you said after the hot start the Celtics got off to, is it amazing that the Cavaliers are only 2.5 back? I think I'm going to go the other direction. With the hot play that the Cavaliers have had, 13 straight victories of their own, and now 18 out of 20, even counting last night's loss to Milwaukee, I'm amazed that the Celtics are still in first place by 2.5 games. They have, you know, while not continuing a 19-game winning streak or whatever the heck that thing topped out at, they have still managed to stay on top of the red-hot over the last 20 games Cavaliers.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we can preach the gospel of all things Brad Stevens and what he's doing. And the scarier thing, I think, for Cleveland and the rest of the East is that Tatum's still growing, Jaylen Brown's still growing. There's a scant possibility that Gordon Hayward figures out a way to get himself back on that roster when it comes to April, even to be in a bit player reserve role. I'm curious to see on how the evolution is with Kyrie, because everybody's really pushing Kyrie as an MVP candidate, and I don't necessarily view him as an MVP candidate, but they're asking him to function in a very specific role, not really as a facilitator. His defense has slightly improved, but to really carry the scoring load. And I wonder if and when Jason Tatum ever hits a rookie the wall, so to speak, is Kyrie able to continue to carry the burden? And do they have enough offensive firepower more than anything else, regardless of how much scheme and tactic Brad Stevens can draw up? How are they going to be able to handle and manage a scoring load right now? Because, I mean, they're scoring about a buck 03 a game right now. That's for about 11th or 12th in the NBA right now. And I'm curious to see if that's going to continue to be their baseline moving forward.
All right, since you mentioned the letters MVNP, LeBron, Harden, LeBron. There can't really be a third choice here, right, at this stage of the season, obviously. Still in mid-December or mid to late December, it's got to be one of those two guys, right?
I got to think so. I mean, I think there was some really big push for Giannis to really get into that conversation. But I think the truth is that it's a two-man race. And I think what we're going to see here, we're going to have this race look like a bit of a Heisman race. And what I mean is I think James Harden is going to be sitting there looking like the Lifetime Achievement Award MVP candidate because he's done so much in the last 4 years and he hasn't won it. But on the other side, he's literally going to have the Archie Griffin, so to speak, of MVP candidates in LeBron James, where you could make the case every year that LeBron should win the MVP. And then you add to the fact that this man is doing it without Isaiah Thomas and he's having statistically the best season of his career. And yet you still got the Houston Rockets that are sitting in first place 30 games into the season with that juggernaut that is the Warriors, seemingly intact outside of Steph Curry being down for about the last week or so. So it's a neck and neck race. My gut tells me that they're going to give it to Harden because LeBron's hit the Jordan pantheon of he's so good, we can't keep giving him the MVP award status. So I think Harden's going to have the lead unless something drastic happens.
We're talking to Eddie Meissanet about the NBA, about the Cavaliers, about the Eastern Conference. Let's go to the Western Conference here since you brought up the juggernaut. Warriors, and yes, Steph is down, and sadly he's going to disappoint a lot of Christmas Day basketball fans because he will not be able to play on Monday against the Cavaliers to have that showdown. So it takes a little bit of the luster off of that, but the Warriors are still the Warriors, but the Rockets have clearly closed the gap. I didn't know that anybody could close the gap, to be quite honest with you, with that once Kevin Durant joined that team. It just kind of looked, you know, we all talked about it. It's just not fair to have that much talent in one group. But my goodness, what Houston has done, it's only through 30 games. The addition of Chris Paul has made so much, has meant so much to James Harden and to that team. They are just completely unstoppable. Best record in the NBA. My question to you is, they're there after 30. Are they there after 80? Are they the same team? Can they really win if it came down to seven games? Can they really beat Golden State four times?
They've got an interesting conundrum for both positive and negative reasons. I do think that the roster that the Rockets have is still a little light when you talk about a depth standpoint. But on the other hand, D'Antoni's figured out a way to do something that Oklahoma City in the past could not do, which is staggering their superstars. Where Chris Paul and or James Harden are on the floor, one of them are on the floor for all 48 minutes of the game. And what they are doing is, in comparison to what Golden State, we could talk about Golden State and their amassing of talent to the end of time. But what Houston's saying is, we are going to swing the math, we are going to swing the Pythagorean theorem, if you will, in our favor as much as possible to take full advantage of what we have on our roster and how we want to go play basketball. And the trick of all of it is like they're on a 14-game winning streak, and there's going to be so many teams that just cannot compete with the amount of firepower they're putting out there from an offensive standpoint. What I want to see is, can that math work out so that they can win four games against the best defensive team in the NBA, which is the Warriors? Not even offensively. We don't even have to have that part of the conversation. Is can they outscore a team that strong defensively? And that's the ultimate test. And, you know, I'm every time I keep watching Houston, I keep thinking, today's going to be the day it falls off. Today's going to be the day it falls off. They were down a ton a couple of days ago, and then they rattled off, a 26-2 run and closed out the Spurs in emphatic fashion. And I was sitting there with my mouth left agape. So every time I keep wanting to put them down, they keep doing it again. And I will say this about James Harden. James Harden is in a position right now where he needs the postseason of his life to prevent people from questioning whether he can be a primetime performer, because they've started to have those conversations about him now, and I think they're probably a bit unwarranted. But from what he did when he was with Oklahoma City and then some of the lackluster performances he's had in the playoffs in recent years, he needs to ball all the way out in the playoffs. It doesn't matter if he wins against the Warriors. He needs to ball out so that certain types of folks don't start to get on his back to question his character when it comes to the postseason.
Eddie Meissanet, SportsFanJournal.com, FoxSports.com as well. Jim Cushman's got something for you here. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, well, speaking of the Western Conference and the Warriors, we're not going to get to see the full ensemble coming up here in a few days on Christmas with the Cavs-Warriors matchup. Steph Curry's going to be out with rehabbing this little ankle thing. They're going to kind of check on him in a week, and that's after Christmas. So it changes the dynamic of that game. But for the Houston part of this conversation, I think that obviously helps them a little bit. Talk to me about the Warriors sans Steph Curry.
Well, I think Warriors fans have always been – that's always kind of been the thing that sticks in their craw a little bit, is worrying about the ankles of Steph. I mean, look, the fact that Steph hasn't had an issue with his ankles in years is a revelation. But let's be very clear. Steph's ankles are made out of chicken wire and baby poop. They are not the strongest thing foundationally out here in the NBA right now. But I do think that has Warriors fans nervous. But I also think the Warriors are taking on this challenge to see, look, can we do this without our best player? And I think it's also allowing not just Warriors fans, but basketball fans to entertain the question of, is this team better with Steph leading versus KD leading? And which is a foolish question, because it's like, good Lord, this is an embarrassment of riches. It is incredible. But if you ask the Warriors fan in quiet, not on Twitter, You know, in the deepest, darkest parts of their souls, are they worried about Steph Curry's ankles? The answer will forever and always be yes.
How much does it take away from the Christmas Day matchup? Because now it feels to me like, because that's always their prime, one of their prime days for the NBA of the year. Now it feels like, and not that this is a bad thing necessarily, but it really now feels like it's going to be touted as LeBron v. Durant straight up.
Oh, I love it. I think this does nothing at all whatsoever. In fact, I would even say it ratchets up the drama just a little bit, because LeBron heard KD come out here and say that, you know, I feel like this does everything for my legacy, and I was able to do it against LeBron. And LeBron's looking at him like, boy, are you crazy? I'm not ushering over this mantle of GOAT to you. This is not what I'm doing right now. I just lost. I'm still the GOAT. And I think LeBron still remembers some of those things that KD said. And it wasn't that KD was taking a shot at LeBron, but I think LeBron is always looking for little things to give him an edge, and he somehow remembers everything. And I think he's going to be 100% ready to try to go at Bron, go at the Warriors. And I think KD's always looking for that challenge. And so I'm totally good. If you give me KD versus LeBron matchup on Christmas every year, as an NBA fan, as a sports fan, we always win. And I'm super excited to see it.
I'm going to go back to the freak, if I can, for a moment. He outdueled LeBron yesterday. LeBron had 39, but he also had 7 turnovers, one of which was the freak taking it from him and going down and scoring late in a crucial moment. He's special, and certainly not trying to discount the greatest player in the game, which is still LeBron. But what Giannis is doing against LeBron this season, anyway, in the season series thus far, is crazy good. Over 30 points, I believe it is, over 11 rebounds and about 6.5 assists. And that's LeBron style. And he's doing it against LeBron, playing the same position and more. What's his ceiling? Is he a guy that in a year or 2 years or 3 years or whatever, does he pass a Durant? Does he pass a Harden, a Westbrook, or whoever the other young stars are as the guy that is the one to ascend to the throne of, quote, greatest player on the planet?
What's fascinating about Giannis is that he's able to do all of these incredible things, and he can't really shoot. It's not that he's not capable of shooting, but, I mean, he put up those numbers against the Cavaliers, and he didn't shoot a three-pointer at all whatsoever. And, you know, the blessing that has happened now is the Bucks actually have Dele and Bledsoe and other guys to bring up the ball, which I think is actually going to be a benefit to Giannis, because I don't know if they necessarily need Giannis to be their actual point guard. But he's capable of doing anything. So you ask me what his ceiling is. I mean, his ceiling is a chance to be a top 5, top 10 all-time player if he figures out every facet of the game. And that's the scary thing, because the man is all of 23 years old, who just turned 23 as of 2 weeks ago. So happy birthday to the Greek freak. But, you know, what he's doing against LeBron, the funnier thing is like LeBron is like at the tail end of the spectrum, and Giannis is now at the beginning of this new spectrum of, oh, you can't really be a superstar unless you're 7 feet tall with a 7'5" wingspan and you are capable of doing virtually everything on the court. Guys like Embiid, guys like Porzingis, guys like, we don't even talk about Anthony Davis in the same stratosphere like we used to, but it's guys like Anthony Davis and now guys like Giannis, where they are 6'11", 7 feet, 7'1", 7'2", doing literally everything. And we're going to hit a funny time in our lives where there's going to be a scrappy 6'6" wing that's going up against these Giants, and we're going to talk about, look at the hustle and scrap and pity him because he's going up against these Giants. That day's going to happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen soon, but it's going to happen someday. We're going to look at somebody 6'5", 6'6", and we're going to take pity because we have to go up against these 7-foot freaks that become the new binary, the new baseline of the NBA, and that's going to be a fun time as well.
Since you brought up 7-foot freaks, let's talk about 7-foot-3 freaks like Kristaps Porzingis. If you're starting a team right now, and I told you could have either Giannis Antetokounmpo or Kristaps Porzingis, who are you starting with?
That's easy. I'm taking Giannis. And it's not a shot to Kristaps. Kristaps is doing tremendous things as the lead guy with the Knicks. I like the total package of Giannis from a defensive standpoint. I like his ability to get to the rim on a more consistent basis than Kristaps. I mean, Kristaps is out here being able to shoot a really good percentage, but I like the total package of Giannis more. But, you know, that's that's such a tomato question, and that's okay because they're gonna the beauty of Giannis and Kristaps right now and Embiid in this circumstance is they're all in the East, and we've grown up in a time of the last since 1999. With the Spurs winning the title in a strike-shortened year, where the West has dominated virtually for two decades.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to finally be in a point again where we're going to get some of the best players reigning in the East. And it's going to be interesting to see the shift of power from a free agency, from a trade standpoint, as guys like Paul George are potentially taking his talent to the West. LeBron potentially might take his talent to the West. There's going to be enough stacked power now that in 3 to 5 years, the East is going to look real beastie again, and I'm here for that.
I've got one more for you, Eddie, but Jim Cushland does too, so I'll let him go first, and I'll wrap it.
Yeah, let's go to the East. The Detroit Pistons, the other team we like to cover here in this area, and they've been streaky, and Avery Bradley is out. But I want to ask a question from a more national perspective on this one, Eddie, because Bob, and you can attest this, I brought this up every now and again, just did it again the other day, and I'm now starting to think that it's for real and sustainable because it's a big enough sample size, and we're almost at Christmas. What I'm referring to is Andre Drummond free throw shooting. He is now 96. No, I'm serious. He is 96 for 153 on the year, 62.7%. I'm now thinking we're late enough into the season that I'm starting to think these numbers are for real and this is sustainable. Am I right or am I wrong? Tell me why. And if I am right that it's sustainable, does he get any most improved player votes for dramatically improving his free throw shooting like that?
You know what? I think we sometimes unfairly typecast players for consistently being who they are after we've seen them for a certain period of time. And we forget that Andre Drummond has been in the league for as long as he has, and he's 24. And, you know, if you're shooting 63% from the free throw line, that is beyond serviceable for a big. I think he would be hard pressed to get most improved player of the year, if only because I think his career numbers, across the board, will look very, very similar as a 14 and 14 guy, which is holy smokes. Do not ever take that for granted that a guy is out here grabbing 14 and 14 a game. That is incredible. But it's interesting to see the impact it's had on the organization. And I mean, they just came off of like a 7-game losing streak, but they turned it around and figured things out again. He becomes more playable. He makes your lineups more sustainable. He makes the team not have to play players that probably either aren't ready. And I think another thing that happens is you create more synergy with your core players. And I think that's something that we saw a lot the last couple of seasons, that Drummond would be out there and he'd be playing, and then he would start to struggle with his free throw shooting, and then the team would become disjointed. And that hurts players in settling into their roles. So I'm really intrigued to see what Drummond does, and I'm praying that he stays here because we all knew what he could be, and he's finally starting to round out into what he should be, which is a dominant 14 and 14, 15 and 15 guy who for 36 minutes is punishing you physically, because we don't have a lot of players left that are just physically punishing, but he's one of them. And, you know, I'm down for that forever. So, Drummond, please keep shooting the rock at a high rate. I'm here for it.
I completely agree. I absolutely love the guy. I love everything he brings, and it's so good to see that he has really, you know, worked so hard to bring that game, that part of his game up to the point where it's not taking away from him and his team in other ways, you know, through means like Hackadre. Last thing, Eddie. They retired two jerseys the other night. Both of them belonged to the same guy at Staples Center. Magic Johnson introduced him as the greatest guy ever to wear the purple and gold. I believe Magic Johnson said that for reasons of humility and also because what's he going to say? Here's the third best Laker ever after me and Kareem, or Kareem and me. But I believe he is the third best Laker ever after those two guys. But it was his night, so Magic said what had to be said, which is very honoring and complimentary of Kobe Bryant. As you look at the career of the Mamba, where do you place him all time? And if you want to go all time Laker, that's fine, but all time in general with his five championships, 18 All-Star appearances, et cetera, et cetera.
Whew, that's a lot. That's a heavy load. But yeah. I will say this is a shocker. For the first time, I am agreeing with Bob France about something. I do agree that Magic Johnson. It was nice of Magic to go in there and say that about Kobe, especially with Cap sitting on the sideline. I bet Cap probably wanted to skylook Magic in the face when he heard him say that. But I digress. I think that Kobe Bryant's got a unique place because for 20 years he is undoubtedly the Lakers fans. Their player, and for an entire generation. And they didn't have to share him with anybody else. You know, Shaq had to be shared. To a degree, Kareem had to be shared. And to another degree, Magic gave us 13 years as a Laker. He gave us a 20-piece. And I think that that actually counts for something in ways that Magic will never be able to provide. And also, Magic had to be there when everything was always good. Kobe suffered through some downtimes. Now, nevertheless, Kobe did go in there and say, I want to be traded, not once but twice. We ain't going to talk about that part. I think that Kobe is a close third behind Magic and Kareem, but I could hear any argument for Kobe being the best Laker, and I would, if the argument was solid, I wouldn't have any problem going with the argument. Where I think Kobe is as an all-time great is where I think it's going to be interesting, because I would probably say he's undoubtedly the second-best shooting guard of all time. I think he's probably a top 12, top 15 all-time player, but I think the math nerds, and I'm a sometimes math nerd, but I think the math nerds are going to look at Kobe's numbers over time, and I think they're going to start chipping away at him in a similar way that they did to Allen Iverson. When they start looking at things like his true shooting percentage, you look at how he shot from the field, where he shot from three-point line. I mean, he's like a career 33% three-point shooter, which is, you know, like two percentage points ahead of Russell Westbrook, if you believe that.
Yeah, but don't do that. That totally discounts the fact that today's players are growing up in the three-point world. I have no doubt that if Kobe was coming up at 19 years old today or out of high school at 18 years old today, you don't think he'd be a 42, 43% three-point shooter. But that was not part of the game when he came up. It was not, you know, not that nobody shot threes, but that wasn't what star players did the way they are today. And I think that's a terrible thing to lay on Kobe, that he wasn't as great of a three-point shooter. He didn't work at it the way he would have if it was today's NBA. It's kind of like saying, you know, a quarterback who threw for 3,000 yards 25 years ago wasn't as good as a guy who throws for 5,000 today. The game didn't require that much passing 25, 30 years ago the way it does today.
And again, this is an odd thing, but I'm agreeing with you once again. And I want to be very clear. Like, I am curious to see how the narrative evolves with Kobe when they start to continue to rank him amongst all-time greats, because those numbers are there. And those ways that we evaluate players have changed over time, just like the way the game has changed. And so it's going to take people to remember the eye test. And the eye test, Kobe Bryant is undefeated. I ain't gonna say he's pretty much undefeated. He passes every single eye test, and that's gonna matter as well. So for those reasons, why I rank him closer to a top 10, top 12 all time player. But it'll be curious to see how he evolves as a rank is concerned with him and his legacy.
No question about it. Eddie Meissonette, read him, follow him. Great stuff at SportsFanJournal.com, Fox Sports, and a host of others. Eddie, always great talking basketball with you. Have a great Christmas. You said you're in Ohio to celebrate it with your family. Really enjoy your time, and be safe going back out to the coast, and we'll chat with you again real soon.
Hey, we'll talk to you. Y'all be great.
Thank you, man. Good stuff, Eddie. Eddie Meissonette joining us right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Hey, you know that with that cold snap we had, and I know most of the snow is gone, but you know that winter has really hardly even begun. And in Northwest Ohio, you want to find a way to stay warm. Here's a great way to help. Car Stereo 1. Get yourself a remote car starter, so you're not standing outside chipping ice off your windshield because it's already being defrosted when you haven't even left the house or the building or work. You get that remote car starter and start your car with your smartphone. It's nice and toasty when you get outside. Maybe you want to get one of those as a Christmas gift for somebody you care a lot about. No monthly fee either. Maybe you want to warm the backside. Here's another way to do it, of somebody special or your own car, with a custom-installed seat heater. That's just $129 now at Car Stereo 1. If you're looking for the entertainment package, obviously at Car Stereo 1, you get the best opportunities. Bluetooth streaming audio and a DVD movie screen from our friends at Pioneer. Not for $300, not for $200, just $156 at Car Stereo 1. Maybe you want full car window tinting. That's just $149. The deals are crazy right now at this holiday season at Car Stereo 1. The best remote car starters, the lowest prices. Need directions? Just log on to carstereo1.com. It's 4:42. We'll get a bottom of the hour local sports center, even though we're past the bottom of the hour. That's okay. We'll come back and I get some walleye tickets with your name on them too. Maybe. Right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed it is. Final segment of the extravaganza, rolling onward toward drive time at 5 o'clock right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Let's go back to the college football recruiting wars we were talking about in the first hour. Josh is calling us from Portage. He wants to talk about it. And Ohio State and Michigan, Buckeyes with the early returns being, by the way, maybe the best class in the country on this early signing period. Michigan not as highly rated. Josh, thanks for the call, my man. What's on your mind?
First off, the Ohio State class, diehard Buckeye fan. I'm really excited about it. But when you had made the comment about his nickname's Blue, we can't just possibly say, go Blue, go Blue.
Yeah, right, he's a receiver, well, too. So he's going to be doing it on the field. You know, if he was a lineman, nobody says go, you know, to the guard, the pulling guard. But the dude's a receiver. He's going to be running out of the field, and people are going to be yelling, go Blue. It's just not going to work. I don't know how they're going to do that.
Well, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm definitely not going to say go Blue, even if we are playing Michigan. But what I was thinking was, you know, that movie Old School, I was thinking, hey, everybody in the fans just start screaming, you're my boy, Blue.
You're my boy, Blue. Okay, that might be a little hard to think of, though, and remember when, you know, because if Curtis Samuel's streaking down the side, let us go, Curtis, go, Curtis, go, Curtis. Or if it's Ted Ginn, or more recently, if it's J.K. Dobbins, or whomever, you know, you're yelling, go, J.K. But if this guy goes by Blue and they got to yell, go, Blue, it's going to blow some people's minds in the horseshoe.
No kidding.
His last name is Smith. Maybe they'll just drop the Blue. They'll say, go, Smith, or whatever they got to do. But, yeah, I just thought it was kind of a funny thing. Guy with the name of his nickname from birth. And, by the way, it was a really cool story that Andrew told us from 11 Warriors, you know, about his jaundice.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, he was born premature, had jaundice, and his dad thought he looked under a light. He looked like he was Blue, and that's how it came there. But it's kind of the thing that how did Jim Harbaugh not seize on that? How did Harbaugh not say, dude, it's in your name. You've got to come here. This is what Go Blue is all about.
Especially with the way he likes to be the eccentric and go out there and do things that nobody else does.
Yeah, spending a night. Didn't he spend a night in a treehouse at some recruit's house? The kicker?
Yeah. Had dinner with the family and all that, yeah.
Yeah, it would be really right up his alley. But, yeah, it's going to be fun. I agree with you. I think it's a very good class. How do you feel about the whole idea, by the way, of the early signing period? You heard Saban and also Urban kind of really complaining about what it does to bowl preparation, playoff preparation, and obviously it puts a lot of kids in bad positions. You know, when schools say you either take this now and sign or it won't be there for you in February.
Well, there's always the good and the bad with every scenario. The way I see it is if it's not too obstructive and what is pertinent at the time, and like you said, Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, they're not too happy with it. But it will be worked around if that's the way it's going to continue to happen.
Yeah, they're going to have to find. I just don't know what it is, though. I mean, if they're telling this is the early signing period, you can get them signed. But, you know, the regular signing period is still there. And, if you know, as Urban said, look, we don't know which players until after our season is over are going to leave for the NFL. We don't know how many scholarships will be open. I can't guarantee this kid now. And then in February, oh, my All-American, you know, linebacker decided to come back for another year. Suddenly that scholarship spot is no longer open. Sorry, kid, go find someplace else. And by then maybe all the scholarships are used up at his second or third choices. That's a real hard thing to deal with.
And then I also think that on top of that, it's you see all these guys saying, oh, well, I committed, but I'm going to back out and go to Penn State instead of Ohio State. Well, how many players or how many high school kids are just going to be like, well, no, maybe we just won't play football. Then all of a sudden, everybody's striking.
Yeah, that's another possibility, too. Yeah, it's fraught with problems, I think, when you try to have two different deadlines. Because now everybody wants to get it done before the first one. And then the second one comes around, and everything has changed when you see different scholarships available and so on and so forth. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think they've really kind of opened up a can of worms here. Hey, I got to run, my friend. Josh, great call. Thanks very much. No go Blue in the horseshoe. Jimmy in Toledo, you're next. Hey, Jimmy, what's shaking?
Hey, as long as Blue is streaking down the sidelines in scarlet and gray, I'll scream go blue. I could care less.
Even against Michigan?
Yeah, as long as he, hey, listen, the whole point of the exercise is what uniform is he wearing. I don't care.
Yeah, but if you're yelling go blue as Blue Smith is running down the sideline with the ball, being chased by a cornerback in blue, when you yell go blue, how do we know what you're really yelling for? Maybe you're yelling for the cornerback to catch him.
If I'm wearing a Buckeyes jersey, is it really any, mystery who I'm rooting for?
Let me ask you this, Vinny, real quick. Would Woody Hayes have recruited a guy whose name is Blue? Michigan.
Maybe with his story, he's the one kid that can pull that one off, all right? if he's so premature and jaundiced that he's blue under the light, hey, he earned it, right?
Maybe right.
It's not like he's wearing a blue jacket in the practice facility, right?
What else you got?
Oh, no, listen. From way back, this is nothing. Everybody... moaning about Jack Morris and the 3.90 career ERA.
Yeah.
He had 85 complete games from 80 to 81 or 84 or whatever when he was breaking in, okay?
Right.
He was his own setup man. He was his own closer. He wasn't getting a 5 2/3 inning quality start, okay? That dude was lining him up and sitting him down, okay? Baseball was a whole different deal back then. Okay,
really
he pitched 19 years. I guarantee you, when he was in his prime, his ERA wasn't 3.9, okay? You got to go for a 3.9 was the totality of his career. When you line up the 80s and you look at his stats and you dig a little deeper, throw out that war thing, okay? The guys of his generation know who the best pitcher was in that generation. And next to Clemens, he was the guy. Some guys just get overlooked because we get all worked up about stats. And him and Trammell were just perfect examples of a time and a team that kind of just got overlooked because of eras and things kind of getting overlooked. There was a little transition in the game and what we value.
I got to cut it short because I'm out of it.
All right, brother.
You great stuff in defense of the Tigers' two new Hall of Famers. That is all the time we've got. Drive Time is coming up, and Mike Miller will not be denied or delayed. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow.